We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Tony, let's go.
What it do, baby?
Yeah. Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
They still have a chance.
They're in it. I know. But to
You just scared Dion.
You scared the crap out of me.
What are you doing, Woo! Tony? You don't scare the guests.
Oh, my gosh. Did I visibly jump out of the chair?
I'm sure.
Oh, no. I've stopped believing. Is that wrong? No, I shouldn't say that. It would be awesome.
They're in the hunt. Until Sunday. That's all I'm saying.
I can't go with you on that walk, man.
They're there until Sunday. And if they lose on Sunday, it's completely over and we don't have to worry about it anymore. But if they win on Sunday. I'm thinking maybe that soundbite you should have like a little lower because it clearly scared Dion.
Yeah, he's two for two on scaring the crap out of
you. Yes. Probably scaring people as they're driving. Somebody gets this at a red light, they might just hit the gas.
We don't want that. That would be bad.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
That'll slap so hard, though.
No.
Like, oh, man. Listen to that Lawrence Holmes Show. Made me crash my car.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2. Go crash your car to it.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Hey, welcome into the show. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. We have a lot of stuff on the docket for today's show. Joe Cowley is going to join me at 1 o'clock. Is Joe in studio, or is he on the phone?
He's on the phone.
Okay. All right. Next week, I have a sit-down with Joe Cowley for House of L. It is worth your time. Yeah, I still haven't. I need to. I haven't finished the list of people that I need to warn about that episode yet. But
could one of them theoretically have spoken yesterday about their sports off season.
Yes. One of them could have done that yesterday, for sure. Don't know if I'll warn him though. But we'll see. We'll see, but Callie's going to be here at 1. I'm going to talk with Speaks coming up in about 15 minutes because this Astros thing is really, really interesting. And what baseball does with it is also fascinating. Along with that, we're going to talk about the Bears and them getting ready for a big game on Sunday against the Los Angeles Rams of Anaheim Rams. We're going to do that, and we're going to talk about the Bulls, but we start the show as we start all things with a rundown.
When did you need that rundown by?
As soon as possible.
Okay.
Just get it right.
Yeah, gotcha. Of course. I'm going to dive in to the rundown.
The rundown.
Here is your rundown for Wednesday, November 13th. Let's start with the Cubs and Sox because the winter meetings are going on. If you didn't know that, so all the GMs are like getting together. They're talking. Rob Manfred has said he would like to see some activity in the winter meetings. Jed Hoyer, Cubs GM, said this about trade rumors in the Cubs.
We can't chase down every rumor. People are going to put stuff out there, you know, about our guys. And, I mean, there's definitely some clickbait opportunity there. We have a lot of guys that have been all-stars, and you can put a story out pretty easily that gets clicks. And, you know, I think one of the things about our players in general is that we're in a big market. They're used to having their name in trade rumors. They're used to having their names out there. And so I think they have a sense of what, you know, what's real and what's not real. But, yeah, we can't chase down every rumor. You know, we can't deny every rumor because we know it's going to happen, and we have to live with that. But I mean, we're not going to add fuel to that fire. That's for sure.
I am curious what the Cubs are going to do at the GM meetings, if we are going to see any movement in the offseason, are the guys that are in their core, I know that's a loaded word, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Javier Baez, Wilson Contreras, if those guys, if one of those guys or more of those guys, or Kyle Schwarber, are going to be moved. We shall see. Meanwhile, probably 20 feet from Jed Hoyer, Rick Hahn was talking about how he's not saying nothing about what the White Sox are going to do.
I'm going to avoid swimming into conversations about free agency. I think we've seen over the last couple of weeks that doesn't make a lot of sense for clubs to be commenting on that. So I will say in general, we were pretty clear about our desire to improve this club both last year and certainly this year as we head into the offseason. We're very pleased with where many elements of this young core are as we enter this offseason, but know that we're not quite where we want to be. So we're going to look to improve ourselves any way that possible, whether it's via free agency or via trade.
Sometimes I wonder, and obviously, you know, MLB puts stuff like this in place so that they can capture headlines like they do it for clicks, the way that Jed is accusing media of doing it for clicks. Like, MLB does this for clicks, but I don't know if it does any of us any good. I don't know if you get anything out of what it is. They say it's stuff like this. I don't know if I get anything out of it, and they definitely don't get anything out of it. I'm not sure why we keep doing it, to tell you the God's honest truth. But whatever. All right, let's move on to the Bears. Eddie Jackson thinks that the Bears can stack some wins after winning on Sunday.
It was huge, you know, especially the division game at home and, you know, all the things we went through early on in the season, first half of the season. So it was huge for us. And right now it's just time for us to build off these and just stack the rest of them.
We'll see if they can. They have an opportunity in front of them on Sunday night against the Rams. Matt Nagy is talking right now, and we just pulled a clip of him because it's the story of the day around the NFL, that the NFL has set up a pro day, basically, for Colin Kaepernick at Atlanta's facility on Saturday. Nagy was asked if he thought the Bears would send anyone to Flowery Branch, Georgia.
Matt, do you know if the organization's decided yet whether they're going to attend the Kaepernick workout or not?
I honestly have no idea right now. I'm just kind of focused in on where we're at. So I'll leave that up to Ryan and those guys and see. And I know that, you know, they'll have a handle on that.
And as a guy who's an aficionado of quarterbacks, you were talking about Phillip Rivers at length a couple weeks ago. Do you have some curiosity about what Kaepernick still has or what he might do in this workout?
Well, yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, he's been out of the game a little bit, but when he was, you know, doing well and playing, he definitely was a weapon. So it'll be curious to see how he does. I have no idea. Again, for me, you know, I wish him the best and all that, and you always root good for people. But for where I'm at right now personally, we're so focused in on the Rams.
All right, that makes sense for the coach of the Bears, and any coach who's going to be asked to be like, well, we're focused on the thing that we have up next. From an organizational standpoint, it would be a dereliction of duty to not go. You don't have to, and I know that Kaepernick is kind of pushed back and saying that he wants GMs and coaches to be there. I would say to him, you don't need that. You don't need necessarily the decision maker there. What I want, though, is the Bears to send someone, and I have offered my services if they would like to send me Saturday. I will write a thorough report on what it is that I see. But someone should go, because your quarterback situation is not good, and it is not complete. You don't have a complete room. So it would be just as bad as what we found out Ryan Pace did in the draft in 2017, when he didn't sit down with Deshaun Watson. You go, and if you find out, if your scout says, you know what, he's not for us, fine. But at least send someone down there to do an honest assessment to see if you can improve your team in any way. Yes, Tony?
And that's what they're going to say, right? At the end of every season, hey, we want to improve and use all our options to make this team the best we can. If you don't send somebody out there and give him a legitimate look, you're lying to every GM will be lying to their fan base.
You can't talk with Jeff Joniak on the game broadcast and say, we're doing everything possible to try and improve the team, when a now NFL authorized. This isn't Colin working out at a schoolyard. This is an NFL authorized workout has been put in front of you. You should go. And there's no excuse to not go. On to the Bulls. Last night, Coby White came off the bench after having a really like rough stretch of games. His college coach was in the building, and he went off.
Coby White, one bounce, left wing three, bam! Oh, he needed that one, folks, and so did the Bulls. Coby White for three. Arch up top to White, one bounce, three ball. Yes! Back-to-back jacks! Coby White, timeout New York! Archie D'Anconone to White, another right side three. Yes! Back-to-back-to-back jacks! Right in front of his North Carolina head coach, Roy Williams. Done left side, White. Let it fly, Coby. Yes! That's four here in the fourth quarter. Coby White!
Four in a row here in the fourth quarter. He's got the Bulls' last 12 points.
Levine, left corner, three ball. Nope. Pulled down by Thaddeus Young in front, Archie Diacono. Coby White! Yes! Five straight three balls. Coby White. White. Another topside three. Got it. That's six here in the fourth quarter.
Oh, my.
Wow. Coby White. What's the Bulls record for most made threes in a quarter?
That sets it for most made threes three. In a
Coby
quarter.
Coby White has set a franchise record for most made three-point field goals in a quarter with six. White, couple of jab steps. Comes up shooting top three. Bam! Put him in the Hall of Fame. Put him in the Hall. He's got seven threes.
Wow. That was a big-time shot right there. His bench is up cheering for him.
120-100.
Well, let's not go Hall of Fame, but he did break a Bulls record for threes in a quarter.
Best guard. North Carolina guard, the Bulls ever got.
Agreed. He also broke a rookie record for threes. So congratulations. That was really good by Coby White last night. It was fun to watch him as a player. And the Bulls won. The Bulls happened to also win the game, which is a big deal. Jim Boylan said that his rookie guard is very good.
Coby was terrific. I thought the beauty in Coby's game was he let it come to him. But also, we found him, and we honored what he was doing by we kept feeding him and kept getting him and kept finding him, and I thought that group did a hell of a job. Obviously, he was terrific, and we helped him be that way, which I think is what good teams do.
Yeah, that's what good players do and all that stuff. Here's what Coby said about this being an unprecedented moment for him.
You've shown the propensity to score a lot of points in a short period of time before, obviously. But where does that stretch rank for you? I mean, do you remember ever being that hot, like, in that short period of time?
No.
Yeah.
That ranks. That's number one. Like I said, I was surprised at something that I was here. But like I said, I just got to give credit to my teammates. They kept looking for me. They were trying to find ways, you know, to give me open shots. Yeah. You know, that's what they were doing. So, you know, like I said, I got to give them a lot of credit.
It's a great game for him and a nice win for the Bulls. And that concludes our rundown for Wednesday, November 13th. Hopefully now you're all caught up. If Mitch says something that's really interesting, we will try to bring it to you. But when we come back, this story with the Astros stealing signs and using electronics to steal signs is fascinating. Matt Spiegel, who's one of our baseball guys, is going to join me next. We're going to talk about it with him, about what it means, and some of the Cubs-White Sox off-season stuff as well. Spiegs joins me next to talk baseball here on The Score.
Most of this stuff, sort of the, let's call it the club-on-club crime, so to speak, that usually gets handled pretty quietly between the two clubs and with the league involved if need be. And I know that over the last couple of years, the league has been very diligent in this category of sign stealing. And certainly any concerns that the White Sox or any other club has had over that period of time have been heard.
Is Charmed getting ready to come on? What is going on right now? That was Rick Hahn talking about electronic sign stealing. And I do think that baseball does itself a disservice when they don't speak as forcefully, because it's kind of cute and colloquial. Oh, yeah, we totally steal signs, and it's okay. We're just trying to get an edge. And then something like this comes up, and it muddies the water. Shout out to Muddy Waters. And complicates things. People are like, well, what's the problem? I already had one text today. They steal bases. Why can't they steal signs? Yeah, that's a really simplistic way to look at something that's very complicated. I am Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. I'm glad that Matt Spiegel was available to come on the show today because I wanted his expertise in this regard. He joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. You can find 500 new and used vehicles out there. Spiegs, thanks for joining me, man. So what was your reaction when you saw the Athletic story on what was going on with the Astros?
The transparency of Mike Fiers is just amazing. You just flat out say it on the record, and we can see why. I mean, he's the key guy here because people have said stuff off the record or anonymously, but he's already been on two different teams. He apparently already talked to both of his teams, and word got back to Houston. And it's like, we don't do that. We don't talk about that stuff. It reminded me of, like, you ever see the SMU 30 for 30?
Yes.
Yeah, and there's a great thing. Like, they meet with somebody at a bar and tell them everything that they do and how they cheat and everything, and then he tells everybody, and then they go and find him and kick the crap out of him. Because you don't give up our secrets. That's not what you do. But Mike Fiers just doesn't care anymore because he's real good without the Astros' help. That was the first thing, was just the transparency of it. And then, as you read deeper, just as you were, like you were talking about, the way that they flouted it, this was not some high-tech, you know, it takes three guys and six mirrors and a spy versus spy operation and two Apple Watches. This was set up a camera in center field, put the monitor in the hallway, and all the dudes are sitting on massage tables. Hey, come on over here. What do you think? You know, and everybody who's available in the dugout or the clubhouse has a chance to walk by and try to figure it out. And then they figure it out, and it's just, look, this kind of thing has been done forever, but it is blatantly against the rules to use electronics. And it was so in 2017. And it was there in the rule book and then in a statement in 2017 from Manfred. And then after that, it got a little more severe, dedicated measures in the 2018 playoffs. And then the rules were distributed to all teams in spring of 2019 with a six-page document and a frequently asked questions thing. So it's been out there, but just the fact that it was so blatantly flouted by an organization that keeps giving the game reasons to loathe them. Over and over and over, the Astros make it available for you to hate them.
Speaks, I got a macro question about this, and then I got a micro one. The macro question is, what's the bigger issue here for baseball when it comes to finding out what actually happened and then punishing the Astros if they have enough proof?
Yeah, you know, you got to find out what happened. You've got to find out how pervasive it is. Because right now what you're getting publicly and privately from the Astros is, look, everybody's doing it. It's just that people hate us, so they're willing to talk about us because we're so damn good. Is that true? How good are they? You know, I mean, what they've done in terms of striking out the most as a pitching staff and striking out the least as a batting, as an offense, is historic. The disparity between those two numbers, the strikeouts, is the biggest ever in terms of pitchers versus batters. So are they that good? Are they that good at developing? Some of their guys have gotten so much better. Bregman and Springer have become incredible contact guys after being hugely strikeout prone like so many others in the league. So you got to figure out if this is really pervasive and it's just the Astros being talked about, or if the Astros have used this to build so much of what they've done. And that's going to be really tricky to figure out. And you've got to try and level the playing field as much as you possibly can. You've got to try and level it because it is so deeply unfair when people are sitting on off speed and it is affecting the outcome of games, but also then contracts. And then it's affecting possible success later on and salary issues. And then the domino effects are just so large if this really is specific to one organization or one or two organizations. So they've got a big mandate to figure it exactly out. And then the punishment should be more severe than anything they've done to a team in this regard.
Now I want to go micro, because I know that you had a very strong reaction to this on Twitter as it pertains to Yu Darvish. And in your last answer, you kind of bring it up that there were people that may have been seriously affected by this, where the way we think about Yu Darvish might not be actually what he accomplished.
Was he tipping pitches? So many of us thought he was tipping pitches. Carlos Beltran said so. After that World Series, he admitted it with a smile to A-Rod right there on the field after they won it. And Darvish was dominated. But it's one thing to tip pitches with something you're doing physically, which does happen all the time. It's quite another to have a camera helping a team know when you're going to go off speed. And think about, as we have now dissected Darvish and know what he does, how great would it be to know that 97 is not coming? Just that. And then you can trust your eyes, or to know that 97 is coming. And that's what it seemingly was. So if that happened and him getting blasted affected it, because what happened his first year in Chicago, that was massive psychological damage. And you could say he should be tougher, and that's fine. He's a sensitive man, and that's what it is, and we all know it by now. But that damage, as it led to Darvish having a brutal year, meant that the Cubs lost a year of consequence in their window because he was completely ineffective. And then they had to go out and chase and spend money on Cole Hamels, and that worked out well. But that Cole Hamels $25 million, and then having to pick up that money for the next year because you didn't know what you were going to get from Darvish, that affected last year's free agency massively. So it could have affected 2 years within the window, Darvish being as damaged as he was. It's obviously not 100% on his failures in that World Series, and that's not 100% on the Astros cheating, but it's a factor that's in there. And look at the domino effect, and it continues to have an effect on just the Cubs and the micro from year to year.
Do you trust baseball to get this right?
No. No. I mean, first of all, they've asked the Astros to investigate themselves, which is hilarious. But what is getting it right? It would have to be talking to everybody around the league. It would have to be owning, with some transparency, the history of cheating and sign stealing that is deemed okay in the game. Because, you know, if you're good enough to steal the signs when there's a runner on second base, or if you can pick it up from the dugout, then okay. Then good on you. That's why they have like these more complex signs that you should do. But if we're all accepting that, then it's a very slippery slope with the tech. And then you're asking what teams to police themselves, and how are you going to do that? No, I have a very hard time imagining baseball getting it right, because baseball gets very few things right in this kind of way.
The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. If you want to ride the Zamboni on the ice during intermission of a Chicago Wolves game, you should sign up to take a spin on the new Turtle Wax Icebox. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES to learn more. We are winners. We are the Wolves. Speaks, the Cubs say goodbye to Scott Harris in their baseball front office. They add a Dan Kantrovitz. What do you know about him, and how do you think that will apply to how scouting changes in their front office?
I talked a lot down the stretch, especially when the Cardinals were passing them in the midst of that very good finish to the season, of just what the Cardinals' secret sauce is. That you look at guys like Paul DeJong and Harrison Bader and, you know, Waka and all these different guys, Jack Flaherty, of course, all these different guys that are their own draft picks. That's been their secret sauce forever, and how especially since 2014, the Cubs drafts have been brutal, absolutely brutal, and there's virtually nothing to show here in this in 2019 from those drafts. So they go outside and they get a guy who, yes, has been part of the A's, and the A's and Billy Beane have done such a great job for so long. So for 5 years, he's been an assistant under Billy Beane, and so he gets to watch that and internalize everything that they have. And he was the VP of scouting with those Cardinals between 2012 and 2014, and that's when Michael Wacha, Marco Gonzalez, who's now in St. Louis, Luke Voit, who they traded to the Yankees and turned into Giovanni Gallegos, Daniel Ponce de Leon, who came up, Luke Weaver, who was a big part of their trade for Goldschmidt, Flaherty, who I mentioned, Kyle Bearclaw, Stephen Piscotty, all these guys drafted by the Cardinals. So for people who've been saying the Cubs need to go outside the organization to add another perspective,
this is a really good place to go. You got a guy who's been with Oakland and been with St. Louis, and that's what you're chasing because they've lost their ability to draft well. McLeod and Theo and Jed, the run they had in Boston is maybe the greatest of all time in terms of drafting and acquiring talent over those last nine years in Boston. But since they've been here, especially after Bryant and Schwarber, it's been brutal. So they've got to fix it, and now with Kantrovitz, they've got a guy bringing a different perspective that they desperately need.
I was listening to Hoyer and Hahn, and I don't know if there's any real benefit to any of this stuff that happens at the winter meetings or the GM meetings as far as talking to your team publicly about stuff that they're not going to talk about. I am curious what you think would be success when it comes to free agency for each team. Let's start with the White Sox. What do they need and what makes the most sense for them to be looking for in free agency?
They need to score big on one of those corner outfielders. They need to, and really, it should be the number one target. You know, they need to know and feel and show that they can go out and get somebody they want. You know, somebody of consequence that they want. If you decided it's Cole Calhoun, go get him. I think it should be Castellanos, Nick Castellanos, but whoever it is. If it's Ozuna, you have your heart set on, go get him. Puig will come cheap. You should be able to outspend people for Puig, but go get him. And the same is true pitching-wise, although you might have to expand that pool. It's not going to be Cole. If you want Keuchel, if you want Bumgarner, I mean, choose who it is and go get them. But the problem for them is it's got to be difficult for them to trust that they're going to be accepted and that somebody's going to choose them. So they may have to chase multiple targets for a while. But they need success, and they need success on a high-end target that they clearly want. So you need absolutely one frontline starting pitcher, one of those corner outfielders, and I think another sort of starting pitcher slash long reliever like a Brad Peacock type or Colin McHugh, I should say. Colin McHugh, somebody like that who could swing at the back end of the rotation.
For the Cubs, do they have to, from a baseball perspective, trade any of the five guys that people think that they might possibly think about trading?
I think so. I don't think they're going to be able to go out and just purely spend on everything that they need. And they also need to diversify. They need desperately to diversify and change the redundancy within that lineup. So the best way to do it would be to trade one of those core and then I think sign a free agent that slides right in. I mean, if I were them and I'm looking to trade, I would absolutely consider trading Contreras because I'm going to get a lot of value, especially if it meant I could go out and get Yasmani Grandal. Or maybe they're going to go out and get Jason Castro, who's has just really started to bloom a little bit offensively, but is brilliant defensively. And in terms of pitch framing, and maybe will help them quite a bit there. But yeah, they need to, there's this big pushback that's happened over the last week as people have said, wait a minute, Chris Bryant is good. And Chris Bryant is good. But if you're not going to be able to sign him in 2 years, then be open-minded about it. And I'm sure they will be. Either Bryant or Contreras, I would expect to be dealt.
Our friend Sam Fells wrote a really good piece about a week ago about the Cubs and spending. Are you one of the people that believes that there's no chance that Bryant would re-sign with the Cubs or that the Cubs would be able to meet what his expectations might be financially?
I just think they have too many guys. I mean, do you want to give Baez $250 million or Bryant $300 million? Do you want to do both? It's incredibly difficult to do both. They've needed the steady stream of cheap talent, and they have not provided it to themselves. So they're screwed coming up here in a couple of years unless they really nail the next couple of off seasons. So I think they could, lock up one of those guys to the 300 mil, or maybe even two if we're expanding it to include Schwarber as a 150 guy and to include Contreras as a 125 guy or a 90 guy, but that's in 3 years. It's just that they've got too many, and it's not timing out well because they've destroyed themselves without the steady stream of cheap labor.
Spiegs, I appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for jumping on with me.
Lawrence, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
That's Matt Spiegel, who covers baseball for us, who hosts Hit and Run here on The Score. I thought that was a really detailed explanation of what's going on with the Astros and some interesting stuff about the Cubs and Sox. I want to go back to that real quick. I'm going to take a timeout. I want to talk specifically about the Cubs and the core five guys and one in particular. I want to get into that next here on The Score.
Yeah, I think we've had a lot of internal dialogue, some conversations with teams, but yeah, I think that with, you know, putting together coaching staff, the manager process, you know, I think we've obviously had a lot of turnover in player development, some in scouting. So yeah, that's taken up a lot of our time. And but I don't think that's different than other teams. I think that's just the nature of our sport now that, you know, a lot of October and November is taken up with that. And so I think teams in general are later to get started exchanging names.
Jed Hoyer, Cubs GM, talking about the winter meetings and what they end up doing with their roster. I've been thinking about this a little bit. I'm going to do a whole podcast tomorrow for LoHo Daily on Chris Bryant in particular. But I am interested in seeing what approach the Cubs take when it comes to the five guys: Rizzo, Bryant, Javier Baez, Wilson Contreras, and Kyle Schwarber. I think a lot of us we look at the business of baseball. I think that Theo and the way that he's done things on the north side, Rick Hahn with team-friendly contracts on the south side, have us thinking in the mindset of the business of baseball. Obviously you want to try and win. We do this in football too. You have to win because of the salary cap with a quarterback that doesn't have a crazy deal. Like, you want to get a young quarterback before they get a crazy deal because it eats up all your cap money and all that stuff. While there is no cap, there is a luxury tax in baseball. And the Cubs are close to that threshold because they're going to have to give raises to guys that are arbitration eligible. So guys are going to get raises. Those five guys are going to get raises this year. And it's going to balloon the payroll a little bit. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I give a lot of credit to Sam Fels for helping to kind of redirect my thinking on this. And I like that he's writing more than just hockey. He was talking about how we kind of allow the built-in excuse of, well, you don't have to pay them. You don't have to pay those guys what they're worth. The crazy thing is that when we look at the way that the Cubs have succeeded, it's an overall success what they've done over the last 5 years. It's been predicated on these young players being really good. And should we not allow for ownership to not reward? I know I'm talking in double and triple negatives at this point, but should we say to the Ricketts, yo, man, you got to pay them? Like, should we just let them off the hook and go, oh, well, they got to trade him because obviously Chris Bryant is going to warrant $300 million and Javier Baez is going to warrant $250 million and we just don't have that, so they got to trade him? Are we letting owners off the hook too easily in that regard? Are we letting the Cubs specifically off the hook if our thinking is, no, you got to trade Chris Bryant now, because you're not going to be able to re-sign them. So you got to get value and start all over. Or with a team in a market like this, should fans demand that good players and great players get paid by that team? I'm not talking about guys that you're on the fence about. But Chris Bryant's resume says he's a great player. And he's one of your players. He's a homegrown player. So should we not be banging the drum for Chris Bryant to get all the money that he can from the Cubs? That the Cubs themselves should pay that man what he's worth. Same thing with Javier Baez. It was Hendry, right, that scouted him and Contreras. But this front office gets credit for the development of that player. You grew these players up, and you got one that's an MVP and two other ones that finished in the top 10 in MVP voting with Rizzo and Baez. shouldn't the obligation be on the Cubs to pay those guys instead of trying to just say, well, you know, the economics of baseball won't really allow for us to pay our own great players? Am I making any sense at all on this?
Absolutely. I find it interesting that just like in the current baseball climate, I think because so many guys sign preemptive deals that end up being advantageous for the team, God forbid anybody pay fair market value for their own guy, it's immediately looked at as a team loss.
Right.
Which is just, you know, I guess I kind of understand. I just don't agree that if you good, you're in a great position then to have these two guys that deserve and have earned big time money. Okay. They've done that for you. So what's the harm if you're going to then go out and spend that money on one person or maybe two? Then why not just spend it on your own guy? Now, if it ends up being a straight up, like, big flaws in the roster, we feel like we just, for our own betterment, need to spread that money out more and go with the less stars and scrubs approach and more middle ground, I guess I can understand that, but with these guys, you should be paying these guys with really no excuse otherwise.
A texter says, what are you saying, Lawrence? Ignore the business side of sport and have a $400 million payroll? No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that obviously you want to try and work a team-friendly deal, but it shouldn't be an insulting team-friendly deal. And what I'm mostly saying is that you as a fan shouldn't default to the business side of it. That there are some players that deserve it. That some players deserve your team to have to be in the luxury tax threshold for a season. And that we shouldn't just allow for ownership to then go, oh, no, we're not going to be a team that goes into the threshold. Nope. We shouldn't just accept that outright as the reality, that there should be pressure when it comes to great players who earned it, that we should be stumping for them and not for the team to necessarily get out of this in great financial shape. That's all I'm saying. That it's become a very easy thing to just be like, can't afford Chris Bryant, got to start thinking about what happens next. Instead of going, Chris Bryant's great, maybe we should pay him. Instead of letting someone else pay him. Yes, Tony?
My thing is just teams that win understand value and paying according to the value of it. Chris Bryant absolutely deserves it because for the length of that contract, he's going to be a good to great or great, and then maybe on the back end, good baseball player. And I think he needs that. Like I never understood why not paying a player at his value when he's most valuable and then waiting until he's too old and then giving him the contract. I never understood that in baseball, which goes to like the amount of service time rule. It's like, why would you not want to pay him when he absolutely deserves it, when you're getting the most value versus on the back end when you know that contract is going
to
be terrible?
That's to Kenny Williams.
Yes, Ken Griffey Jr. All I'm saying is don't allow for the business of baseball to just let good players and great players, I'm talking about great players go. Don't just sit there and take it as a fan and say, oh, well, it's just the way business is. When you start talking about the excellence of a team, the ownership aspect of it, the dollars and cents aspect of it should be held to a high standard too. That's all. This segment is being brought to you by Valparaiso University. We all want to be part of something bigger. At Valparaiso University, you can be part of something bigger without losing yourself in the crowd, and you'll discover that making the world a better place isn't just wishful thinking. Visit valpo.edu to request information or apply for a scheduled visit. I'm going to talk basketball with Joe Cowley. Yes, that Joe Cowley. Next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.